They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Ahoy hoy! Welcome there, viewers. Welcome aboard. If I sound a little different, it's because Nathan and I were talking the other day, and we realized that we had left Jake in our old offices, and so we've actually been using recordings of him doing the intro for these past, like, 2 months while we arranged an exfil for him. So I've come back to the Indianola offices to retrieve him. He's safe. He's happy. And he's going to get back to work very soon. No one cares about that. What people do care, however, about is movies. Nathan, last week, you just took some time to talk about an excellent movie in theaters. This week, I'm going to do the same thing. I have just, like, half an hour ago seen Conclave. This is a movie by Edward Berger, which Nathan informed me, directed All Quiet on the Western Front, the German movie that we didn't quite enjoy. But a lot of people enjoyed it, and a lot of people, including myself, are enjoying Conclave. I don't think that this movie has the same kind of broad appeal that Saturday Night is probably going to have, or doesn't have as broad an appeal, because this is a fairly philosophical, heady type of movie, dealing with a lot of somewhat esoteric religious themes and practices, but I thought it was fantastic. If you're into that kind of thing, and if you like tense political thrillers, I think Conclave is definitely going to do it for you. It did it for me. I really, really enjoyed it. So it gets a strong recommend from one half of Magellan's at the Movies.
The important half, to be sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I really want to see. I didn't know that was in theaters, so I'm going to have to go and check it out. So hopefully sometime next week you'll be able to hear the other half of Magellan's at the Movies, their thoughts. Elliot, the other thing you wanted to briefly banter about is Christopher Nolan has a release date for his next film. I believe we have the two leads. I believe it's Tom Holland and Matt Damon are the two people fronting this movie. And there is a multitude of rumors spiraling about. I would love, my dream is that in 2 years it turns out that, like, Nolan was feeding just ridiculous rumors about the movie to people. Obviously, coming off of his Best Picture win and Best Director win, this is, as well as the stunning financial success of Oppenheimer, this is sure to be one of the most anticipated and most talked about movies. I think I've seen rumors. I just today saw a rumor that it's about, like, cops and helicopters. Yeah. I'm not that genuinely. That was, like, the front page news that it was, you know, his movie is about helicopter cops. I've seen that it could be a horror movie. It could be a period piece. It could be a thriller. It could be science fiction. It's all over the place.
Yeah, you said I wanted to talk about that, and then you just said pretty much everything there is to say about it. I have heard all of those rumors. The only one that you didn't get that I have seen is that it's, like, about vampires or something.
I've seen that as well.
Yeah, I think that the most prominent one is this whole thing about helicopter cops. Although it's a to be clear, the rumor is like two futuristic cops in futuristic LA who operate a science fiction-y helicopter fighting crime or something.
Wow, that's a great premise.
That is a great premise. And according to the rumor, which, I mean, who even knows if it's true? I do not believe this, but according to the rumor, Nolan has been circulating copies of a movie called Blue Thunder, which is about helicopter cops, to his cast and crew to ensure that everyone's in the right mindset. That doesn't sound like something Nolan would do. That kind of sounds like something maybe Francis Ford would do while he's making Megalopolis. But I don't know. The truth is, no one knows except for Nolan and the people that he's working with. So, obviously, I have faith in Nolan.
Emma.
I have faith in Nolan. Even right now, wherever he lives, he's got his two Oscars, like, on a shelf in the bathroom or something. Or maybe on his nightstand. That are testament to his capabilities. So whatever ends up being the truth, I'm going to be excited for it. I have lots of faith in Nolan that he won't let me down.
I feel the same, Elliot. And also, this doesn't really have anything to do with his, well, it has a little bit, but I saw that Warner Brothers offered him a huge sum of money to try and get him to come back and do this movie with them, and Nolan turned it down. Which I just have to say, I always have a huge amount of respect for people who decide to take a stand on principles and then maintain that past when maybe it was necessary that Nolan stopped working with Warner Brothers because he took kind of offense. He didn't appreciate the way that they treated some of the rollouts during COVID of releasing movies directly on streaming as opposed to putting them in theaters. And I'm just glad that he's standing by that hatred of Warner Brothers, because I think Warner Brothers, if any, I think a lot of movie companies right now deserve hatred, but I think Warner Brothers, and particularly David Zaslav, who, in my opinion, is not a great person to be running a movie company, deserves to not have a Nolan movie on their docket. That's not the stance of the Magellans at the movies.
Okay. Well, there it is. I can't even think of how I could add to what Nathan just said. That was pretty wild. So yeah, we'll see. Obviously, this is going to be a not insignificant cash cow for Nolan. That you have the fact that it is Nolan, coupled with the fact that he's coming off a very successful award season with Oppenheimer. I'm not surprised that Warner Brothers was willing to shell out. I mean, they've got to be desperate at this point for a financial success.
A banner year, for sure.
But, So
anyway.
Go ahead.
Yeah, anyway, let's get to talking about the movie. Elliot, this is very exciting. We have received a request via the email. They did not give a name, so we can't call them out by name as we usually
do. Their name is Fox Glomer or something.
J. Dot. Yeah. But you know who you are if you're listening to this episode. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much for sending us an email. We've been asking people to send us email. We've been praying for spam emails, and we got a real email. But anyway, they requested Kingsman: The Secret Service, so that is the movie that we're viewing today. In case you're unaware of this film, it is a 2000 and... give me one moment...
14
Matthew Vaughn movie from the twisted psychotic mind of Matthew, just a true psychopath.
Why is he even making movies? He should be in an institution.
I love those. I love the, in case you're not familiar, the Argyle trailer, that Matthew Vaughn's latest movie, Argyle, always said, like, from the twisted mind of Matthew Vaughn, which I thought was hilarious, because he's never made a movie that I would call twisted. But anyway.
Especially Argyle, Kingsman, which is, like, one of the most milquetoast, unoffensive movies you could make.
Gosh, it's funny. Anyway, Kingsman: The Secret Service was one of the biggest surprise hits of 2014. It spawned a sequel and a recent prequel. It received quite a few very, very positive reviews, I seem to remember. And yeah, we've had it requested, so now we finally kind of we're watching it. We're reviewing it right here. It's about Bond, you know, spy stuff. It has some James Bond pastiche going on. It's got some other things going on too. Elliot, let's just do it. Was this your first time? I genuinely can't remember. Have you watched this movie before? Was this your first time? Or
this was my first time with Kingsman.
Okay. Wow. Well, let's open it up, Elliot. Oh, first thoughts, first impressions here, then we'll dive in.
Yeah, so this is an interesting movie. Gosh, I feel so bad that the email was just so politely worded and so enthusiastic about the movie. So I feel really bad, but I wasn't in love with it after it was done. Unlike a movie like, say, In the Mood for Love, that just has this clear, like, irreparable, massive flaw at its heart. Unlike that,
so untrue.
Kingsman, I think its issues are a little bit more spread out in terms of its characters, its use of the James Bond pastiche, which we all know I am already not a fan of. And some, what I felt were unnecessary digital enhancements to action scenes. Like, we'll talk about this more in depth, I'm sure, but just moments of some questionable CGI or slow motion that I felt just kind of took me out of things when I wanted to be immersed. That is not to say that there is nothing to like about this movie. Lots of great actors here. Mark Strong, Taron Egerton, Colin Firth, obviously all very talented. Samuel L. Jackson, even though I was not a fan of this villain. I really liked the sense of whimsy and the charm that the movie inserted into this riff on spy movies. I really liked there were some moments of humor that got me. I liked the costume design. I know it sounds like I'm reaching here, but I did really enjoy the costumes, because that's actually not incidental to this movie, is the suits and all the fancy get-ups and stuff like that. So I mean, there's definitely stuff to like about it. I can see why Mr. Glomer or Mrs. Glomer or Glomer is a fan. I think that just for my personal taste, this wasn't quite me, if that makes sense.
Wow. Well, it sounds like after a very contentious episode narrowing down our top 10, we've got another contentious episode, because Elliot, I had way more fun with this than I expected. And that's not to say that I think it's a perfect movie or it's like a masterpiece. I think a lot of the things you're going to critique it on are going to be things that I'm like, yeah, that's not illegitimate. That is, in fact, present in the film. But I think for the most part, I just had a ton of fun with this. I've said on this podcast before that I thoroughly enjoy every single James Bond movie on some level. Even when they're like bad movies, I find the tropes of them very entertaining. There's just something fun about watching a British guy make bad puns and use ridiculous gadgets to kill ludicrous villains. And so I thought this movie was kind of a similar vein of that, that it kind of, like you were talking about, that sense of whimsy, that sense of charm. When I was reading some of the reviews for this movie, one of them talked about that Matthew Vaughn feels that we should make comic book movies comic booky again, that he didn't really like the shift towards more gritty, realistic comic book movies. And I see that all throughout this film, that the movie is very over the top. It's very aware of how ridiculous some of the things that it's showing you are, but it's wearing that on its sleeve in a way that I found very charming and fun. And it was just a fun movie. I more often had fun than I was thinking, oh wow, this is kind of underdeveloped or this doesn't really work. Because again, there are for sure things that I'm sure we'll get into that don't really work, don't pan out, don't feel like they're necessary. But on the whole, my emotion watching the movie was generally, hey, this is really fun. I wouldn't even call it like a satire of a James Bond movie, because there's only like two moments where they explicitly call out a James Bond trope and kind of like subvert it or make fun of it. Most of the time, they're just doing the James Bond tropes. Like, the villain has a henchman who has kind of a ludicrous weapon or thing that they use to kill people. That is a classic James Bond thing. The Bond villain, you know, the villain has a ludicrous plan, the heroes have ridiculous gadget. Like, for the most part, this is just a Bond movie that's rated R, which I just had a ton of fun with. So, yeah, let's get into the ring. Let's start fighting. Let's start using childhood insults to belittle each other's positions. Elliot, where do you want to start?
I thought you were going to decide where to start, because you're team Kingsman here.
Well, I think we should start with the action scenes, because I think this is maybe one of the points that I don't agree with your criticism. I thought the action scenes were, I'm going to just keep on saying this, a lot of fun. I didn't notice any weird CGI. There were a couple times, yeah, where the movie does kind of a goofy slow-mo, but I felt like in general, the fight scenes looked so visually interesting. I don't know what he was doing. I don't know what he was cooking up in the lab with these fight scenes. I don't know if he's like taking frames out, but there's something about the way they look that is very unique and just very satisfying to my, you know, monkey pattern recognition brain, that it was just fun to see every fight scene. And so I really, really enjoyed all of the fight scenes. I think the standouts for me were definitely the first fight scene where Galahad beats up the guys in the bar. And then, honestly, I really liked when Eggsy is running through the villain's lair at the end, and he's like having to jump around and dodge things and shoot the people. I just thought that was so, it was so kinetic and energized and exciting. And again, I'm going to keep saying this, like, it felt like the movie had so much fun energy. I just completely forgot to be like overly critical towards it.
Well, I don't
like
know
some
how
people I know.
I don't know how overly critical you would need to be. I feel like maybe just a baseline critical could catch some things. Because I think that this movie is at least on the borderline of having the Mandalorian problem of action, which if you didn't know, because I have explained this before, the Mandalorian problem of action refers to movies where the main characters slaughter faceless goons at such a remarkable, exhausting clip as to make all hope of stakes impossible. Like, the goons just do not present enough of a threat for you to at any point be worried about the hero's well-being. But instead of this ending up in a John Wick situation, the choreography is not dynamic enough, it's not interesting enough, it's not skillful enough to paper over that. Like in John Wick, it looks cool, even though the goons present no threat to John Wick, it's stylish enough that it still looks cool. But Eggsy running through the hallways, popping off easy headshots, getting avoiding goons' gunfire in, like, straight corridors where missing takes some real skill or lack thereof, that just doesn't really do it for me. So there were, like, there were two fight scenes where I was actually engaged. The fight between Eggsy and Valentine's henchwoman, who I thought was really cool, and I liked her slicey legs. What was the other one? Maybe there was just one. Okay, so just that one.
Wow.
Because when I think about the other action scenes, I think, like, the one where Galahad beats up the dudes, I think that's okay, because I like the whole, I like the trope of the seasoned mentor is underestimated by a bunch of pugnacious weirdos, and then he teaches them a lesson. I like that stuff. So that was fine. So maybe it was those two that I liked. But then when I think about the other ones, like the whole scene in the church that everyone seems to really like, I was just like, yeah, Galahad is making short work of these people because they're just people and he's a super spy. Why would I be worried about his well-being here? So, yeah, and just the whole thing with the slow motion and the occasional iffy CGI, on the whole, the action was not my favorite part about this movie.
Wow. I don't know what to say. I mean, that's just down to straight taste, because I just don't. Because, yeah, I agree. There's very few stakes in a lot of these fights, but I would definitely favorably compare it to John Wick, where the style and choreography of the fights are what make it fun. That, yeah, the church scene is not exciting because I think one of these, you know, Southern people aren't going to be able to get one up Harry. It's exciting because, you know, Harry's doing all of these neat little things and he uses so many different weapons, and it's, again, very kinetic, and it's filmed in such a way that's very exciting to watch, for me at least. And for most people, I mean, again, this is, I'm just saying a lot of the things that people said about the movie on release, that it was fun, that it was exciting. I don't think anyone says that the movie is, and I wouldn't say this about any James Bond movie, that there's a huge amount of like, oh, what's going to happen? He's James Bond. He's going to kill everyone and then win. And then, you know, he's going to get the girl. Like, that's how this goes.
Well, maybe they should rethink that. Because, I mean, there's lots of different ways to do action. There's different ways to make it work. And I think it usually falls on a spectrum from stakes to flashy choreography. And movies like this just kind of fall in the middle for me, where they're not far enough in either direction for me to really, I don't know, get all that invested or be all that impressed.
Well, I guess that's just, you know,
it's just like we your just opinion, disagree on man.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's nothing more to be said than that. I could call you an insult, but I'm above that. I'm better than that. Anyway, maybe let's move on to talking about kind of still in the style sort of area, but let's talk about some of the characters in this movie. You already mentioned you like the henchwoman. I agree. I think she's a great, again, version of this. She's definitely the best version of this stupid Bond trope where, again, I say stupid very lovingly, as I love the ridiculous Bond henchman. My personal favorite is Jaws, who clearly is a useless villain who's... I love how convoluted they have to make it to make his stupid shark teeth a thing that seems intimidating. I thought, Knife Legs is way more intimidating than that. Watching her use them is fun. When she cut the, like, very clear James Bond parody guy at the beginning in half, I thought that was great. I love James Bond, so when that guy showed up and did all the Bond-isms, I was like, oh, this is sick. I love James Bond. And then he got cut in half, and I was like, oh, that's even sicker. Like, this is so fun. So yeah, I like the henchwoman. In terms of the other characters, I think Eggsy is, he's an all right character. I think he's well played by Taron Egerton. He doesn't have really a huge arc. He's kind of a classic, you know, British bloke who's underachieving, and then he gets, you know, pulled into this. It's kind of like Alex Rider, if you ever read those books, which I was a huge fan of when I was a kid. I loved Alex Rider. But it's kind of similar vibes to that, I would say, is Eggsy. I really liked Colin Firth as Harry. I loved a lot of the scenes with him. I thought he was super well written, that I just loved everything that he said. You know, his manners maketh man, and are we gonna stand around, or are we gonna start fighting? Those are just, it's just fun to see that. And yeah, I just thought he was I really liked Harry. The other characters, I always like Mark Strong. I like Merlin. He's a good man in the chair, man in the, whatever it's called, whatever they say in Spider-Man, the guy in the chair.
I think it is, yeah, just the man in the chair.
Yeah, I would say, and this is, I'm assuming, something that's going to be echoed by you, Elliot, is I don't love Samuel L. Jackson's villain. I think he's serviceable, but he's treading... it seems like he's trying to tread a line between goofy and, like, a serious threat, and I think he just too often goes over that line to just be goofy. The lisp thing, in combination... Like, he feels like he's got one too many quirks, that he could have maybe just had the lisp thing, because he's got the lisp, and he... you know, speaks in a way that's very uncouth and American, which, you know, makes some sense for a British thing, for the villain to be someone who's kind of hip and American and cool. But between that, the lisp, the, you know, having an issue with blood thing, it just felt like too many things at once, and it never congealed into something that I thought was a really strong character or villain to be intimidated by. Although I did find the idea of Barack Obama going along with this plan, that felt so unnecessary. There was no reason to make it Obama stand-in. It could have been any other president, but it was so clearly trying to be Obama, I just thought that was goofy. But yeah, that's my thoughts on most of the characters here. Elliot, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, that whole Obama thing, that just came out of nowhere and then went nowhere. So I don't know why the movie thought that Obama, of all people, is going to be some kind of psychotic megalomaniac. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't tell if it was supposed to be a joke or if it was supposed to be serious. I don't know. It kind of threw me for a loop. But anyway, yeah, I found Eggsy to be a little bit disappointing because it seemed like they were, for a while, like, his whole thing was going to be a working class James Bond, that he was going to kind of merge the respectable British politeness that James Bond is famous for, the like high class manners thing, with a more freeform, a more street level kind of approach to things. But in the end, he just kind of ended up being James Bond. And I was thinking, like, oh, here's something different. Here's something we haven't really seen before, is a kind of working class super spy. So I thought that was a chance to mess around with the formula, to freshen things up a little bit, and then it didn't end up happening. And his most humanizing traits of his connection to his friends, to his mother, to his, I guess, half-sister, kind of fell by the wayside by the end of the movie. Which I was disappointed by, because those were simple, albeit effective, humanizing traits that, like, giving someone a personal connection, that's a good, quick way to humanize someone and make them feel more relatable. So to see that not really get picked up on at the end of the movie was, it was just a little bit disappointing. I liked Merlin. Like I said, I think Mark Strong is great. And he was responsible for a lot of my favorite jokes. For example, when they're in the, when they infiltrate the secret hideout and Eggsy jokes around with him and says, "You've been upgraded to my valet." And Merlin says under his breath, "Oh, you cheeky little," I like that. and of course, Colin Firth is a great actor. I think that grounding his character in a, like, 10-second moment that we see at the beginning of the film was probably not the best choice, because his whole motivation for being a mentor to Eggsy, for continuing to push him along, is this apparently super deep connection that he had with his father, and the guilt that he felt over inadvertently allowing his father to die. I mean, that's pretty heavy, substantial stuff that I think 10 seconds is not going to cut it for me to really go along with that. So although I can acknowledge that Colin Firth is very good and he plays his character very well, and I did like him, I did like his character in the sense that he was just an accomplished, cool, suave spy guy. I mean, that's just, it's hard to mess that up. But I thought, it felt like the movie was trying to make him something a bit deeper, a bit more empathetic, but the route by which it tried to arrive at that, I felt was too short. And now we come to Valentine, who is just very silly. He's got a very silly plan. He's got a very silly motivation. He's got a very silly voice. So I hate silly James Bond. When you say, I say this lovingly, I say that hatefully, because I think that silly James Bond is just laughable in all the worst ways. And I did not care for Valentine's whole meta jokiness about, this is the part in the spy movie where this would happen, because it reminded me way too much of basically the exact same thing that happens with Samuel L. Jackson's character in Glass, where he's constantly saying, like, this is the comic book panel where you'd have a bug-eyed expression and there'd be exclamation points around your head. And I'm like, dude, shut up. I get it. So that is not something that you want me to be reminded of, Matthew Vaughn, even though your movie came first. So actually, Shyamalan was ripping off of you. But yeah, I think that you're right. He was too silly to be intimidating, and his plan was too horrific to be silly. even when they're doing the whole heads are exploding to the musical stylings of some kind of peppy band thing, I was just a little bit like, oh, wow, the world is going to be in absolute chaos after this because all of the major world leaders will be dead. So we're probably going to have a lot of wars. Probably a lot of civil wars, and the geopolitical situation is going to be terrible. So, I was a little bit too. If anything, I was too invested at that point because I was thinking about all these consequences and ramifications, and I was thinking, I don't think you really understand that the true consequences of what's happening here. So yeah, I would say that the character front is, I mean, we could call it a wash if you want, if you want to be generous. I would say it's a bit of a flop, or maybe that's too harsh. It's a bit weak, I'll say, for me on the character front. I do like these archetypes, and some of them are cool, and all of them are well acted, but the writing, frankly, is just not there to forge any kind of true connection.
Yeah, I guess I would firstly say I disagree. I think the firstly, I can't remember enough from Glass to recall that even happening. I can barely remember anything from Glass outside of, as the movie was ending, being like, whoa, this is the ending he's going with? That's terrible. This ending sucks. But I really liked his, you know, oh, so this is the part where I do this thing. Because I felt like it was one of the few times where the movie was injecting some amount of stakes that it was like, okay, we're going to be silly up to the point where it's too silly, I guess, that him shooting Harry, I thought that was a good moment. And even then, Eggsy flipping that on him, especially since stabbing a guy with a leg, I mean, James Bond would have a field day with that. So many puns you could make. I'm not going to make any of them because I'm not a genius writer, like the writer of such masterpieces
need
as
a leg up.
Tomorrow Never Dies. Yes! I'm just saying, like, that is so rife with Bond pun opportunities, and Eggsy doesn't do it. So I think that's kind of fun. That's the kind of thing I get a kick out of. But I would say, and this is kind of to your point, no good things, Elliot. This is kind of to your point. I do think the movie fails to achieve a lot of the emotion that it wants to. I think there's just a lot of things that kind of either go nowhere or are too half-baked to be a big deal. The character of, I think her name is Roxy, is a really good example, that she's one of the people competing with Eggsy to get a spot in the Kingsmen, and she ends up beating him. And then I did, for the entire climax, until I realized that it does make sense in the world of the movie, I was like, dang, why is Roxy not the one being sent into the, like, villain's lair? Like, why is she getting this B-plot thing if she's the one who actually made it into the Kingsmen? And then I was like, oh, they gotta send a guy in to impersonate a guy, so obviously they can't send Roxy to do that. But she just does feel, it feels like her character goes kind of nowhere. She doesn't really have a very strong, it feels like she should have a strong relationship with Eggsy, but it just kind of goes nowhere. Kind of similar with Charlie, the other person who makes it really far in the Kingsman program and ends up, you know, showing up later in the movie and causing issues. He feels so underwritten. It feels like one of those great Stephen King bullies that it's just like, wow, who, you know, why did you wake up and decide to bully poor people? Like, what possessed you to be like this? And then, yeah, Eggsy's relationship with his mom, feels very underdeveloped, mostly because he doesn't spend almost any time with them. And so those are the biggest things that are keeping me from being like, yeah, the movie's like really fantastic. It's just like, yeah, it's really fun. And if someone asked me to, I would rewatch it. If I was hanging out with people and they threw it on, I'd have a good time. But it's not something like, yeah, like John Wick, where it's just like insane amounts of incredible choreography and the center through line is solid enough that I'm like, oh yeah, this is fantastic. So I would agree that a lot of the emotional heft of this movie is kind of underdeveloped.
The through line is fantastic for a few movies.
Well, yeah, it's really good for the first two, and then you're like, oh, they have
we're
no
just gonna
idea
keep on
doing.
Going Yeah.
Yeah. Are you excited for Ballerina, a John Wick story?
Of course I am. That sounds like I was excited for the TV show. Can't remember what it's called. The Concord or whatever.
The Continental.
The Continental. Yeah.
The Concord.
Sorry. Conclave is on the brain. So I was just thinking of two syllable C words.
Cons.
Yeah. Charlie, there's not even a shot of his head exploding. Which I thought that at the very least there would be a moment like they have with the Swiss Prime Minister, where he's a minor secondary antagonist, so we get a bit of payoff when we see him blow up. But that doesn't even happen to Charlie. Roxy, I don't know why Roxy's even there. Aside from she does serve function of destroying that one satellite. What were you going to say?
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, it feels like there are, and I don't want to be one of those people who's like, oh, I could write this better. Let me come up with some other ideas that, you know, the screenwriter should have done. But it does feel like Roxy is exclusively there for plot reasons and has nothing to do with a lot of these things that I'm talking about enjoying in the movie, which is that sense of whimsy, that sense of charm, that sense of that, you know, that James Bond is kind of a silly idea, but if you take it very seriously, then it becomes something that's very fun and upbeat. And Roxy just feels like she has no place in any of that. I would say the only scene where there's any sense of like, oh, that's kind of fun, is when they reveal that all three of them, all three of the finalists are going to be trying to seduce the same woman at the club. Which was another scene where I was like, oh, this is rife for some classic Bond parody stuff. And then there's just a very brief scene before it segues into something completely different.
Well, that was another scene where I was expecting Eggsy's street smarts to come in handy. But again, they just really don't. They're just really not interested in that aspect of his character. Despite the fact that it creates some opportunities for Stephen King level bullying of you work at McDonald's. They're not interested in anything deeper than that, which is disappointing. Although I do find it difficult because it may not seem like it, but I do try to not judge a movie based on the type of movie I wanted it to be. Because obviously a movie should be judged on its own merits. There's that. Also, this is just apropos of nothing, but the whole thing about Eggsy has to impersonate Arthur, Sir Arthur, that's Shadow in a little cameo appearance. Hold on a second, Shadow.
Nice.
Has to impersonate Arthur to get into the place. And this kind of happens because, spoiler alert, Arthur tries to poison Eggsy, but Arthur pours the drinks out of the same pitcher, and then only one of them is poisoned, meaning that Arthur would have had to have surreptitiously poisoned it himself, separately from when he was pouring it. But there was never any time where that could have happened. So,
jeez Louise, Ellie. I didn't realize I was listening to an episode of Cinema Sins. Holy cow.
Oh, well, I was just thinking of the Simpsons joke where they're like, oh, what are we supposed to believe? That Itchy had some kind of magic thing? What are we supposed to believe that that Arthur had some kind of magic poison chalice that only poisons one person?
Yeah, that's exactly what he had. How did he have that? I saw a thing once. This is again apropos of nothing, but I saw a thing once where people were talking about, like, you know, judging fictional characters. And someone was like, I always find it funny when people are like, wow, that character would never have done, like, this thing. It's out of character. What do you mean they wouldn't have done that? I just saw them do it. They did it right up there. What are you talking about?
What do you mean
Arthur didn't have time to poison only one glass? I saw it in the movie, Elliot. How else could he have done it?
Nathan, you need to ask more of your movies. You need to... be more,
no.
You need to raise your standards, my man, because you're worth it. You're worth movies taking the extra time to think these things out.
Whatever.
So, yeah. Let's...
We put The Dark Knight in our top 10 of the 2000s. That movie is rife with things that don't make any sense.
I'm not sure that's 100% true, but that's a conversation for another
time. Very true.
Let's just move on. How about
anyway,
that?
Anyway, I guess, yeah, Glomer to continue talking about this movie.
Wants us to be talking about, has commissioned us to talk about Kingsman. Not The Simpsons, not The Dark Knight.
Here's some of my final kind of comments and thoughts on this movie. I think on a technical level, I think the fight scenes look great. I think they're super kinetic and fun. I think the music is aggressively generic. I think every time the music started playing, I was like, I swear this is music from another movie. At one point, I think it sounded like Inception, and then at one point it sounded like Pirates of the Caribbean. It just felt very derivative. So I don't know if you got that sense as well. I don't have a ton of other sort of closing comments. I think I've said most of what I want to say. So, Elliot, do you have closing comments here before we get to ratings?
Yeah, I mean, it's shot very well. I am willing to cut it a little bit of slack in the CGI department because this is an older movie. Dude, this movie's 10 years old. That's pretty crazy to think about.
Older...
And that is, at this point, that is an older movie, relatively speaking.
Yeah, I guess.
But, yeah, so that's fine. I had no problem with the music. There were times where I thought it sounded very much like National Treasure, which is a little funny, so.
Yes.
Whatever. Yeah, there's not a whole lot else to say other than to just to emphasize that I do like this movie's style. I liked all the posh British things being used as gadgets. I really liked that scene, like basically the Q scene where Galahad was running Eggsy through all of the different cool gadget stuff. And I like that they came back in the final fight scene where he's using the grenades and the electric ring thing and the umbrella. The umbrella is a neat little device.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like all that. I like this movie's style, and it is enough to salvage the movie from being bad, but not enough to push it over the edge of subpar. So I'm just trying to frame my eventual rating here. Hi, Shadow.
Well, you can just give it a rating now. I mean, I feel like that was
good
enough.
I'm going to give it a C-, right?
No.
It's just on the wrong edge of mediocre. There's certainly stuff to enjoy here, and I think a certain kind of person... I think that this movie is definitely targeted towards a certain audience. or at least being part of a certain audience helps. Helps you to... Yep, that's Shadow. Helps you to get into it. Like, Nathan has this connection with James Bond. Glomer obviously has some kind of...
That's not...
What?
I don't even think that's one of the words in there.
I thought it was. I thought it was like Gloomer or something.
We'll
so clearly, theory. I mean, again, and people like this movie. I am clearly in the minority here. So don't let my opinion tarnish this movie in your eyes or think that you won't like it unless the things that I've been describing sound like they would be problems for you. Yeah, I think that there is reason to believe that you would like this. I just don't happen to be part of that demographic.
Well, I think we should let your opinion of this tarnish our opinion of you, Elliot, because I'm here to speak for the majority, aka the people who are right. And I think this movie's a ton of fun. I don't think it's a perfect movie. I think there's definitely things holding it back from being a really fantastic movie, but I do think it's a really, really good, fun action movie. I'm going to give it a 7.4 out of 10. I think it's a thoroughly enjoyable film.
That's like, if we made that into the equivalent of a letter grade, that would be barely ahead of what I gave it.
I know, but here's the thing. An F is below 50. So, like, if I give it a 5, like, I have an extra 5 points that you don't have in my scale.
Whatever.
Does that
make
sense?
Let's just acknowledge the fact that Nathan believes in mob rule. That every time an angry mob gets together to enact some kind of mob vengeance, Nathan is like, oh, I bet those people have a really good point.
No. No, just with movies. With movies.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's why Nathan really likes Birth of a Nation. Because a lot of people like it.
Oh, good grief, Elliot. holy cow. That is, wow. Anyway, recommendations. My recommendation is another British action movie from a British action director. It is Guy Ritchie's Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. It is, I would say, just as stylistic as Kingsman: The Secret Service. It is a much more low-class sort of movie, in the sense that all of the characters in it are trying to get money, which I don't think any of the characters in Kingsman are really trying very hard to do. It is about a bunch of interweaving stories of criminals stealing various different things, the paths crisscross. It's a really fun kind of puzzle box, or not a puzzle box, but kind of a Rube Goldberg machine of a movie. It's very fun to see all of the different pieces click into place as the movie goes along. And yeah, it's just a super fun, stylistic British action movie that I think if you liked Kingsman, you would probably like this for a lot of the same reasons. That it's slick, it's well crafted, it's got great writing, and yeah, it's a great, good, fun movie.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard you compliment Guy Ritchie.
The rest of his filmography does not leave a lot to compliment.
Well, The Covenant is pretty good, but you haven't seen that, so.
Haven't seen it. Yeah, haven't seen it.
Yeah, my recommendation is going to be along the lines of, if you like your movies, or if you like movies like this that really take a feeling or an aesthetic and just go for it, my recommendation is the 2012 Judge Dredd movie.
Oh.
So this movie is what Matthew Vaughn wants from comic book movies, because this is a extremely comic booky comic book movie. If you didn't know, the whole deal with Judge Dredd is that he's basically a super cop in a dystopic American future where people mostly live in these massive skyscrapers. I know it's incredible to think about. But yeah, so it's kind of just your standard Judge Dredd story that he gets stuck in there and he has to fight his way out. And along the way, he's doing very stylish takedowns. There's a lot of heavily stylized combat or action. I don't know why I'm talking about it like it's a video game, although it does have a very video gamey story. It really leans into the whole grungy comic book aesthetic. So I really like it. Karl Urban, he's a great actor, especially for this kind of role. The gruff, no-nonsense taking super cop, I think is well-suited to his talents. So yeah, if you just want the style points, just want the heavy use of a particular style, and if you want that particular style to be comic booky as Matthew Vaughn does, I think you're going to be very well served by Judge Dredd, because it's just a simple, fun little action movie.
Well, I haven't seen that, but I have heard very good things. I'm shocked you didn't recommend the Sylvester Stallone Judge Dredd movie, because I've heard even better things about that iteration.
You know what? I haven't even seen that movie, so.
I don't think a lot of people have.
But, you know, a very wise man once said that life is what you make of it. But I'm here to tell you that's wrong, because the truth is that life is hard and full of disappointments. And I'm sorry if I'm sorry if I've disappointed you, Glomer, or whatever your name is. Obviously, Nathan is Team Kingsman, so.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you so much again for the request. We love filling out the request, even when it's a movie we don't like. I guess I'll speak for myself as opposed to speaking for both of us. I love seeing movies that other people love, because I think the breadth of film and the breadth of types of films that people like is enjoyable. And I love this request. I don't know if I was ever going to get around to watching this movie if it hadn't been requested, and I had a ton of fun with it. So sure. You really made my Wednesday night.
Yeah, I also like that, and I would really like to. I like hearing about why people like the movies that they like. So, Glomer, if you want to just send us an email explaining your affection for this movie, go ahead, and we'll read out the whole thing on the next episode. But yeah,
we will. And if you're another listener and you have a favorite movie that you want to hear us critique, hear our thoughts on, then feel free to shoot us an email. We will fulfill that request as fast as humanly possible. In the meantime, we're going to be back next week with another brand new episode talking about a movie. I'm really excited about it just because I love talking about movies. So we hope you have a great week. And thank you so much for listening.